Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hello. Before we begin, I need to thank you for listening to this podcast. And if you'd make contact, rated, reviewed and subscribed, please know that you are everything to me and are very much appreciated. If you have spare real life cash, even a tiny bit, then I'm on a site where you can swap that for hoovering related prezzies. See patreon.com/ The Hoovering Pod. I am beyond honoured to have stolen an hour of this week's guest's time. I'm talking to someone who is actually actively changing things for the better, the brilliant MP Jess Phillips. I bring some burnt cookies to her office and at the start of the chat, I'm a little bit giddy and I wish I'd shut up a bit more, but Jess is so funny, I was all excited. I calm down quite quickly, I promise, and we get into some really incredible stories and conversations. We cover everything from her partner's Crystal Maze approach to cookery. We learn her new motto and I quote, "Bovril is my touchstone." We get serious about food poverty and less so about supermarket worship. She lives near an Asda that looks like the Louvre.
They do that when you're on question time, they set it back.
Even on question time?
Even on question time.
So they feel a lot more professional.
And then they say things like, we just got to make sure that recorded. And you think, oh, I'm not doing it again. Maybe you're doing it once.
Imagine going through that. How many question times have you done?
Three, I think.
Oh.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it.
You're so... I mean, I hate it when people say it to you, but comedians, you're so brave. Say it all women. Yeah, I told a joke. Like, question time, you're actually brave. I think I'd rather be fighting a war. I think I would. I would. I'd rather be shot at.
Just because I have a strategy that if I don't know the answer, I'm just going to be honest and say I don't know the answer.
Oh, but surely that's the best thing in the world.
Yeah. Let you off the hook. You don't know the answer.
It's not just letting off the hook, it's what people want to hear. Yeah, yeah. They would so much rather that.
Oh, I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know that.
Yeah.
I don't know everything.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
I don't know anything about sports policy. What I know about the FIFA agreements,
yeah,
you could write on the back of a stamp, a very small stamp. So I
can't believe you got asked about that.
Yeah.
I mean, this one's not really for me.
Yeah, exactly. I think someone else should answer this one.
I'll be all right. So I will explain the introduction where we. Well, I should say it now. We're in your office.
Yes.
Thanks for having me here. You've got a pot of Bovril.
I've got a pot of Bovril.
Just on your desk.
I love Bovril. I don't know if there's any Bovril in there.
Oh, it's empty.
It's empty now.
I like the smell of Bovril. Do you know what it makes me think of? Hospitals.
Really?
Not in a bad way, actually, but in a kind of
Well, not the Barry's have been very lucky, and my experiences have been in hospitals have been very few, but I've got like a child. I think I had suspected appendicitis when I was 9, and I loved it. Like, I loved being in hospital. Like, I really loved people bringing me food all the time, but also there was a free hot drinks machine, because this was the late 80s, yeah. early 90s, where there was still like free things in hospitals.
And so you could have bother.
Yeah.
Chicken soup. I remember at my mum's office there was a vending machine that had a Pax Max chicken soup, and I have spent my life searching for that same chicken soup flavour, and I've never ever found it. So once in a swimming bath, they have Pax Max
chicken soup. This is probably just so much MSG and salt and sugar. Oh, yeah. so good.
And but Bovril is my touchstone. I absolutely love Bovril. I was reintroduced to it recently by my mother-in-law. Oh, Guinness, swimming pool.
Well, it's very nutritious, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is like that. Oh, this will be good for you. A lot of iron.
I started taking the kids swimming on a Sunday morning, and she always brings a flask of Bovril. And then when
do you think it's her, like, hangover poison?
Oh, maybe.
Because it fills all the requirements, doesn't it?
Like, drink. could be. And then I just became totally obsessed with Bovril again. And so when Elenka first started working for me in the office, I would just eat Bovril, and I was also, because it got no carbs.
Yeah.
So you don't have to put milk in it. So if you're on a ridiculous diet or anything, you could just have Bovril.
Someone putting milk in Bovril has changed the way I'm going to think about Bovril forever. It's an easy thing. If you've got no sense of smell and you think that's a black coffee,
exactly.
That could be used as a great dare.
What a shocker that would be if you thought it was coffee and it was Bovril.
When I was little, my dad used me as a... he would basically say, I won't get up unless you brought me a coffee.
Yeah.
So I'd have to wait till a certain time, and then I'd have to make a coffee, and then I'd bring that up, and one day, as a trick, I put vinegar in it. And I didn't really understand the sort of chemical consequences of that, and he pukes up.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
He deserved it.
Yeah, he did deserve it. Fan of Bovril. Good to know.
There you go. So that's a good show. Fan of Bovril.
Talk to me about this smoked chicken last night.
So, yeah, my husband smoked 3 chickens yesterday. We have a smoker in our house.
What's a smoker?
I mean, it's basically an oil drum that my husband's converted, but it has, like, he can live tweet the temperature of it. It has a machine. My husband made it from scratch. And it has, like, probes that go into whatever meat you happen to be smoking.
Yeah. Or can you do, like, garlic? Can you do anything?
Oh, you can do anything. Smoked anything. And it then, like, smokes it for ages and ages and ages and makes it really succulent. So yesterday he was doing jerk chicken, so he made... So he smoked it on, like, pimento berries and allspice and bay and applewood. And then just, you know, glazes it with jerk seasoning and works it on the barbecue to finish it off. So we smoke a lot of shit.
And that'll be the snapshot that gets taken onto Twitter. That has made my mouth cry.
Yeah.
What a thing of joy.
I know, and he's obsessed.
And he's just made it. Is he always just making stuff like that then?
Always. On the weekend, always just making.
Is that what he does? For work?
No, he's just a real enthusiast. His mum is the same.
Really crafty.
He's really crafty.
I'd
he's
love
an
to
engineer,
be crafty.
So he can make shit. And then he can make, but he's sort of weird because he becomes totally obsessive about one particular sort of food until he's perfected it, and then he will never make it again. So for months and months and months, we ate sourdough until it was perfect.
And then he never had it again.
Once he got it, that was the end. Burgers. He used to make his own burger cheese. Like, he looked at recipes.
Like his own cheese?
His own, you know, like making plastic cheese.
Have you got a cow?
Just get milk.
I've heard of people making butter by shaking milk for a really long time.
My husband made his own butter for a while. He makes smoked butter.
Yes, I mean, there's nothing that doesn't taste nice as smoked.
Smoked. Nothing. Smoked salt. Delicious.
Any
old thing, we whack it in the smoker. And so he becomes totally obsessive. So we have all of that stupid equipment. Like, we've got a sous vide and...
With is that where you put it in a sandwich bag, zip it up, and then cook it very slowly so it goes all sloppy?
Yeah.
But all the flavour stays in.
All the flavour stays in. So, yeah, and it looks really cool when you get
it. I've only ever heard of it because of MasterChef. And on that, they're a bit, like, snooty about it, aren't they? They're like, oh, everybody's doing this now, and I'd still love to try it.
It is pretty good. So we have literally every single ridiculous contraption in our kitchen.
You may be desperate to come to your house.
You're more than welcome. Come over any time.
And or get successful enough to be able to commission your partner to make me a smoking drum for my garden.
He would just make you one. Just ask him. It's all got like parts that were like 3D printed and stuff. He's like designed the whole thing. It's like amazing.
Wow.
It's an amazing thing. He's always made. So we used to have a pizza oven that he built with his bare hands.
What?
In our back garden, but then we moved house.
So lucky then.
But again, he had perfected pizzas by the time we moved house.
I feel so bad because I feel like I've got a similar mentality to him in the sense that, like, I will do something, like I've made these cookies for a previous guest, I've realised, but I didn't cook them for long enough. So I'll do the same thing, as in, like, I'll make something again and again until I've nailed it, and then never make it again, much to my partner's fury.
But
it's really annoying, and I'm sorry, but I feel like I've been put in my place, because I've never, like, made the equipment to make the thing. I've just followed the recipe again.
I don't know who he's talking to on the internet. Some people.
Is this the dark web of home cookery crafts?
See, he has some people who talk to him about food on the internet.
Yeah.
And making things, engineering things. And, like, whatever is the thing that he really likes. So we had to buy a deep-fat fryer recently because fried chicken was the thing.
And he
now totally perfected that. I absolutely love his fried chicken, but now it's gone. So I then have to learn, and I can't tell me how to make it.
Yeah.
And it's never ever as good because he is a brilliant cook.
Yeah.
He's just brilliant at it.
Do you know what? I can't recommend enough to him and you, but it sounds like it would be right up his trousers. There's a guy called George Egg, who's a comedian.
Oh, we went to see him in Edinburgh.
Perfect.
Yeah, and he did it with he did an egg with a wallpaper stripper.
Perfect.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
I did this podcast with him, and he made me a cheese and cauliflower toasty with a blowtorch and an old Terminator 2 DVD case.
Amazing.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, we took the kids to see it in Edinburgh last year because we're obsessed with weird food.
I'm going to make you try one of my cookies.
Excellent.
I hope they're nice, but they look a bit burnt. Yeah,
they look delicious to me.
Okay, they smell nice.
Well, I've got my crop. I've got a cookie in my boob. They are a bit burnt.
They're a little bit burnt.
But
they're
nice.
I have to do them for a third person, and they'll get the best ones. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
They're all right, aren't they?
They're nice.
They're vegan. Can you tell?
I wouldn't have been able to tell them. No, you told me. I'm going to feel
disappointed
that they're not as good.
Yeah. No, that's why I didn't say it before. I'm so used to people. Going, oh well.
How is chocolate vegan? I suppose
dark chocolate hasn't got any dairy in it.
Mm.
Well, do you know what? I actually made these because I still have some really posh dark chocolate, which happened to be vegan, from an Easter egg left over. And I thought I'd freeze that, smash it up and stick it in this. It's fine, isn't it?
They're nice.
A little sugar boost on it.
So it's got no butter in it?
No butter in it.
Eggs? No, you don't put it in a cooker.
It's got a tiny bit of oat milk. Vegan marge.
Oh yeah,
brown sugar, white sugar, flour.
Marge is often better for cooking.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law is amazing at baking. Yeah. She always bakes with marge. So.
Right, good to know. Is she like the Mary Berry of your family?
Oh, she is, but we try and constantly every year get to go on the bake-off. But
she's that good?
She's that good. She's amazing.
Really?
She's amazing, yeah. Absolutely amazing. Which is probably where my husband gets it from. But she swears all the time, so she wouldn't ever make it on air.
I'm desperate for her to go on it. What's the point of them going to Channel 4 if they can't have swearers on
exactly.
now?
Exactly! Little old ladies swearing like sailors.
They should have! Like a late night XXX bake-off.
Yeah.
For the foul mouths.
we're basically in the Houses of Parliament right now.
Indeed.
What places are there to eat round here?
Oh, there's absolutely loads.
Are there? Like within the buildings?
Yeah.
Because Jay Rayner wrote like a really horrible review of the Stranger's Dining Room on Sunday.
Well, it's... I'm not surprised to hear that.
He said it stank of cabbage and was really overpriced. And everything tasted of nothing.
That is a good assessment. I think the food has got better in my time, though. So there's a number of different places to eat. The best place by far... is a place where you can only go if you're a member of Parliament,
right.
And that is the members' tea room.
Right.
Just because they do amazing ham, egg and chips and really good. And when I'm not eating carbs, which is frequent, they do amazing cheese and ham omelette.
Oh,
and it just
nice.
Totally hits the spot, really buttery.
It should be just for you, there's got to be some perks.
Well, that's the one perk. The Lords are allowed in there if they have been a member of Parliament,
right.
Not if they haven't.
So, do you just need to have been an MP once?
No,
and then you're allowed in there for life.
You have to
that only counts for Lords.
Yeah, for Lords, yeah.
Oh.
I know, it's another one of those great...
great
things. You know, unfairnesses.
Let's talk about this carb avoidance. Why are you doing that?
Because I'm a dick, I think the official answer. That's what my husband says every single time I mention it, which, according to him, is 1 million times a day. I might have that because I'm not eating carbs. And he's like, oh, no, you're not eating carbs. You've never mentioned that, Jess. I have been on a diet all my life.
Oh,
in one form or another. Pretty much all my life, actually. I'd like to punch very hard in the face anyone who says, well, you just eat less and exercise more. It's like saying, don't smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, just give up heroin.
Oh, I had a producer say to me once, I love this script, I want to make it. Can you just go away and come back more successful? It's the same thing. It's like, have you just happened to get more famous? Yeah, cool. That's tangible. Cheers, mate. But it is that same
You've
thing.
Got to
like,
do something
can you just eat a bit less and do a bit more? Yes, that hasn't been the aim.
Yeah.
For my 30 whatever years.
I know, it's just like, oh, really? You think if I eat less and exercise more, I'll be thinner? Well, you're a genius. So, yeah, that is very annoying. But I find that if I don't eat carbs, it is just the simplest way without having to count a load of stuff, where I just eat less.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's just less options.
Less so options, but also options. I think the theory is meant to be that you're fuller, aren't you? Because you're having a load of protein. But
yeah.
I gave up carbs once. I've said it before on this podcast. I did a fortnight of completely no carbs. And I got into a terrible road rage incident where I tried to get into a violent encounter with a car full of large men because they'd bibbed me for not going through a red light. And as they began, thankfully, just laughing at me, I thought, you silly, silly.
You need a baguette.
Yeah. Get a baguette. You need a baguette. Exactly. Well, I just thought, I'm never giving up carbs again.
But I almost exclusively don't eat carbs really anymore, but... I do it like twice a week.
So you're doing 5-2.
I have a day
but
off.
No carbs.
I 5-2, but I no carbs. But I have a day. I also do 5-2 at the same time. So I intermittently fast 2 days a week as well. Because that's just another way of not having to count it.
I'm really interested. I agree. I think I've always found that anything that involves counting or you just get obsessed with it and it becomes just miserable. But with fasting, are there stuff like that you won't do on fast days? Like if you've got a massive important meeting or.
Yeah.
I don't know, something really
adrenaline. I find it gives me really, really real energy, but yeah. I tend to fast on Mondays and Wednesdays because I'm here.
Yeah, okay.
And boring anyway.
Slightly more predictable day.
Yeah, that's
staying still.
It's a predictable day and you don't have time to eat a lot of the time, so you don't even notice. And so I eat at the end of the day. So I'll fast for 24 hours. So I'll have my dinner at 7 o'clock at night and then I'll have my dinner again at 7 o'clock at night. But I don't even drink tea or anything.
Water, hence tell me about water.
I have Bovril.
Bovril.
I don't have it. Yeah, clear liquids.
It gives you. I've done it briefly, but what I do is on the days I'm allowed, but I want have so much.
Yeah.
Jazz.
Yeah.
I undo the work of the fast
days. That was initially my problem, which is why the carbs thing.
I love how complicated we can make our lives. Oh, I would find on a perkier note for it that at some point in the afternoon I'd feel really sharp. brained. And I fast.
Totally.
Really sparky.
And I did that one, that ridiculous Light the Life diet once.
Oh, just yes. No. Will you pay someone to give you some dust to eat and nothing else?
Dust.
Oh!
It was just dust that said Shepherd's Pie on the packet, but it wasn't Shepherd's Pie.
It wasn't. It was brown dust.
It was awful.
That was.
But I did lose absolute shed loads of weight because I starved myself.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, right, you know, like, what's that film where they take a pill and it makes them amazing? Source Code or one of those ones. Yeah. That was what that was like. If you starve yourself, essentially.
Oh, yeah, you will get thinner.
I was literally like, I could have done like the maths in Good Will Hunting. I was like, totally amazing. My brain was so.
You starved yourself into the Rain Man.
Exactly. I was like acute to everything.
I feel like I need to make it really clear that it is not advisable to starve yourself just for a half hour of feeling clever. Anyone listening to this, please don't do that. Because what it is, what's doing that, it's your brain going into crisis mode. It is. Yeah. If we were still like cave people and you hadn't eaten for that long, your brain goes, right, we're going to take everything, sure, all resources left, because you need to hunt something or find something and get it. So actually, it's not necessarily ideal.
I know, but to be doing that. I was like, I was changing the world.
Well, because of the job you've chosen. If you are an MP that takes on incredible causes, Jess, then you probably can do some quite great things with your hour of genius. Yeah. It's less helpful if you're in any other job. Anyone other than an MP listening to this, please don't starve yourself. MPs, tuck in. Eat the dust. I feel like it's quite symptomatic of women generally, and increasingly men, but like of every generation around now, apart from maybe women in their late 80s and older, but even them, some of them, that this lifestyle of just constantly being on a diet that's never going nowhere. There's a big movement that's bigger in America that I'm so excited by and sort of creeping my way towards, of like just trying to completely let all of that go, like completely get rid of the whole concept of diets and instead get to a place where you're trying to become aware of what your body feels like when you eat. You're allowed whatever, but you kind of go, well, I just had a cookie, so I probably feel quite giddy for a bit, and then I feel a bit shit an hour later. Or whatever, like, just trying to work out when you're hungry, when you're really hungry, whatever, and not leaving it ages between eat it anyway. It's complicated and boring.
But I just don't think that I could do that, because I have a bad relationship with food, probably because I've been on a diet my whole life.
Yeah.
In that
you can improve any bad relationship.
I would like to think so.
You can. That's not a word. You can. You can and you could. You can't.
I either massively overeat or I totally starve myself. It's not a healthy way to live your life. And I really don't like as well those people who just say, well, I eat absolutely loads and look at me. Because they do not eat two tubs of ice cream and a whole multi-pack of crisps in an evening. No. They do not eat a whole packet of biscuits as if it's a bag of crisps.
No.
Whereas I do.
I can just breathe the packet in if I'm in the right mood.
And I think if you go to McDonald's, for example, you have to have a full meal and a double cheeseburger.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so yeah.
McDonald's does not fill the gap at all.
No, McDonald's isn't filling. I read an article back in April, this is bleak, right, based on a report that children in poor areas are coming to school grey and filling their pockets with the food that they can get at school, showing obvious signs of hunger. Is that so? I've got loads of questions. I just want to tap into your expertise and experience, really, in this. Like, food poverty generally, is that something you've experienced in your time as a campaigner or as an MP?
Every single day.
Every day?
Every single day.
So it's getting worse?
Well, yeah, it's certainly getting worse in my office. So if I look at the rates, even just, we are a referral agent for the Trussell Trust for food banks. And the number of cases that we are seeing has dramatically increased, certainly since the dawn of universal credit. That has caused people to be in real crisis. So yes, I see food poverty all the time. We have little kids that come in and they have obviously learnt the mantra, you know, it's nothing to be ashamed of that we haven't got any food, you know, it's just because mummy won't get paid next week or daddy hasn't been paid yet. And that is, it's harrowing. And that hunger, when you're, especially if you're a parent, I think that I could take almost anything from my children. I cannot bear it when they don't eat.
There's something primal in that desire to feed them.
Yeah, just when they were little and they wouldn't, I couldn't get them to eat a full, what I consider to be a full meal in some crazed world that I lived in. And my mum used to say, oh, they won't starve themselves. I'm like, yeah, anyway, I want them to eat this.
Yeah.
I used to find that incredibly intolerable. Mm. And now they eat more than I can afford to feed. but when you see children who are hungry, that it's like you have feared it, I have a bit of actual empathy in my stomach of the pain of hunger.
Yeah.
And it is harrowing that people can't even afford the basics. Can't even afford like a bag of pasta.
It's so painful on so many levels, isn't it, that you've got this, that it's painful on the basic physical, this is awful to see, it shouldn't be happening. But again, that thing when you even stop to think what that's going to be like for the parents, knowing that they've got no choice to be doing that.
The one of the worst things that we see, which again I see every single week, week in, week out, is families made homeless by whatever, whether it's universal credit, whether it's problem landlords, whether it's just that something happened to their house and they were made homeless. They're moved into hotel accommodation or bed and breakfast accommodation, certainly not the Ritz. And the single thing that they complain about, so at the moment I've got two families, one family of seven, so five kids, two adults, one family of six, both living in one room. And they don't complain about the fact that they're all living in one room. The single thing that upsets them the most is that they have no cooking facilities.
Yeah.
So they cannot cook for their families, and you cannot eat cheaply if you are
poor.
I haven't even got a microwave. You cannot eat cheaply if you are poor, when, and they're often in like service stations. We have people on sort of 25 services and people sent to all manner of Frankie services in the West Midlands. We've got families living there and travelling miles to get their kids to school. So they can go what to like welcome break.
And yeah, the most expensive place to buy food is just getting a £4 cold Ginsters.
Exactly. That is what they're living on. Both the families I was talking about, they're both Muslim. And so during Ramadan, like the sort of horror of the fact that they wouldn't be able to even have their basic sort of faith needs met, and that they wouldn't be able to do this very special thing. And anyone who grew up in a place that has a big Muslim community will know that an iftar, to eat iftar together, is an enormously pleasurable thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that they couldn't do this, so in my office, Salma, who works in my office, created a rota so that every single one of us had a day and we would drive over to the service station and take them food. So my dad cooked some food. And hilariously though, they got really picky. They were like, well, the kids don't like spice, because we were all thinking, oh, we'll make them last nice Indian food and stuff. They were like, well, the kids don't like spice, and obviously they don't eat pork. And also, unless you're going to go to the halal butcher. So it was like, I think everybody just made fish pie.
Fish pie if you're not the whole of Ramadan. Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The idea to the people in my office that during that time, like at Christmas, it would be exactly the same. If there were there were even Muslim families there at Christmas, my office would be like, right, okay, this is about eating. This is a community is about eating to us and sharing food.
Yeah.
And the thought that they couldn't do that because of the state failing them.
Well, so, that's what I was going to say as well. So this is because of benefit cuts.
Yeah, a lot of the time it's because of benefit cuts. Hunger, a lot of the time, is because of benefit cuts and benefit changes that don't take account for people's lives. So it might be that they end up pretty much with the same amount of benefit in the long run, but when they transition, people fall through the cracks. Yeah. Because I think the people who design the system think that everybody's got a couple of hundred quid at least in their bank. I mean, ridiculous.
Well, if that was true, then we wouldn't have seen the rise of Wonga and the like, would we?
Exactly.
Rinsing people for exactly that. Have this 200 quid and slowly pay me back £3,000 over the course of the next year.
Absolutely. But, I mean, you see people in debt all the time. And people, unfortunately, end up homeless because of hunger. Because if you are a single mom, you've got three or four kids, or even one or two kids, and you've got to decide, you've got this bit of money for these 7 weeks.
Yeah, you spend it on food, not rent.
You spend it on food, you don't pay your landlord, you end up in arrears. Once you're in arrears, you can't move, you can't get it back, so you're then getting evicted, and you'll never get that 7 weeks back. So the margin of poverty exists in just what you can tolerate. And if you can't tolerate 6 weeks, like most ordinary people in work, you and I would be able to, if I didn't get paid for 6 weeks, I mean, I'd be buggered, but I wouldn't be evicted.
Yeah.
However, it's a massive vicious cycle that as soon as you're in arrears, you're a pariah to the system and you can't ever get back. So I meet women all the time, especially single moms or victims of domestic abuse who prioritise feeding their families over paying their rent or their council tax.
Yeah, like human beings.
Yeah, like human beings, because you would.
What can we do other than obviously like give to food banks, vote for people that might change this?
Yeah.
I mean, those two whacking great, practical, obvious things. Is there anything else? I mean, part of me obviously give to food banks because for some, for so many people, that's a lot all there is.
Yeah.
But that shouldn't be the end, right? That's the big society. That's not the solution. It has to come.
Well, we have to change the rhetoric about welfare. Oh, it shouldn't be called welfare, it should be called social security. And we have to recognise that we all have relied on it at some point or another.
Yeah.
No matter how rich we are, we all receive social security, whether that's through pensions, whether it's through child benefit, which used to be universal. There isn't really an adult today who didn't benefit from a welfare state. Because even the richest people got family allowance. We have to change the idea that it is somebody taking something from the system and think that it's something for all of us. People don't talk about not liking benefits. People, it's not sort of common parlance. What people say is, well, our next door, she doesn't work and she's got a nicer house and a nicer car than me. Why should I go to work? Mm. To which I always say, if it's that easy, why don't you do it? Yeah. If she's not going to work, just give up your job. You'll find very quickly that what you think
what
is going
think
on
is that
is
situation
completely
is not
different.
Yeah.
Would you swap places is what my mum always used to say when I got angry with my brothers. Would you want to be them? Stop feeling like they're getting something that you're not, because you have a better life. You are considerably better off if you don't have to rely on benefits. So we have to challenge it where we hear it, and it presents itself in all sorts of different ways. But also we have got to come up with ways of getting people. I think there's quite a lot of innovative ways about teaching people to cook and things that is cheaper and all of that sort of stuff.
There are some people trying to go that way, aren't there? There's Jack Monroe.
Yeah, Jack Monroe does a lot of that pound, meal for a pound.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about my husband yesterday, made loads of Brighton peas and got three chickens and smoked them. And the whole thing fed like 19 people and it cost 20 quid. And I was like, that is amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, for lots of people, that's never going to be the case.
To do that, you need to be cooking on mass generally.
Yeah.
You need
also the skills.
You need not to live
on the M25 services.
Yeah.
You need not to be relying on a ginsters.
I've stayed in plenty of services ibis in my time on the road as a clinic. And even one night there when you're there because you... It's not because that's your home now. It's one of the bleakest... That pot noodle that night, it's one of the most saddest things you'll ever taste.
I went to... We took my son. Seems odd because it was his birthday's on Halloween, so it would have been freezing. We took him to Blackpool for his birthday.
Cool.
And on the way, we were only there one night, staying in like a sort of B&B with two families all like crushed in together. And the food I ate was exclusively beige. And on the way home, we actually stopped at like an actual farm shop and just ate some broccoli. I'm going to get scurvy because I'm, everything I've eaten is deep fried. I have a similar experience of most trips I've ever taken to America.
Yeah.
It's just like, are there any vegetables? Has anyone got any vegetables?
Yeah. Your just body just screaming at you for something green.
So, yeah, but we've got to change the way we feel about people who are on benefits. And, yeah, vote for people. Also, I think that if the Windrush scandal has taught us anything... Telling the story of these people who are, for example, living in bed and breakfasts, telling the story of children in school, it does help. It makes people feel...
Making people heard.
Yeah, and telling the real, true stories of people that you could know, you could easily know all of these people,
yeah.
That will change things. So I think it's the Huffington Place have moved to Birmingham this week, and one of the major things they're doing is talking to people who live in temporary accommodation because Birmingham has the worst homelessness in the city, in the country.
Really? Yeah.
So telling those people's stories,
yeah,
is always really important.
Super important.
Yum in my tum.
5 second rule, yes or no?
Oh, 5 hour.
5 hour.
I've eaten sweets from down the side of the sofa that could have been there since I bought the sofa in like 2007.
I feel nothing but love for you. Have you ever eaten anything for a dare?
Oh, when we were kids, we used to like do that thing where you blindfold
to see
you
two brothers.
Yeah, I've got three brothers.
Three brothers.
So they'd blindfold you and you just eat random things out of the cupboard.
What?
Yeah, so you got to sit there and you had to eat whatever it was.
It was always food, at least.
It was always food, at least. There was no, like, feces or anything. But it was, I remember, this was long before, I think maybe it was, you know, everybody went to Thailand. everybody put fish sauce in literally everything that they ever cooked.
Yeah.
Long before that was a thing, I think my mum and dad from some Chinese supermarket had like a thing. This was in like 1987. Had a thing of fish sauce in the cupboard that had probably been there since 1981. And my brother's fed me a massive teaspoon of that, and that is the worst thing I've ever eaten. It's shocking. Shockingly bad, early noon plara. So yeah, I've eaten loads.
I mean, it was probably just someone in Grimsby's liquidised a fish, wasn't it?
Oh, it was so awful.
Wow.
But I've eaten quite a lot of stuff as a dare. I am willing to be dared to eat things like bugs and things. I've eaten bugs and in foreign countries and things.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I'm not fussed. I'll eat crickets and things like that.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever eaten?
I've eaten a cricket.
A cricket? Was it alive? Have you ever eaten anything still alive?
Oysters.
Delicious. Do you like them?
Oh, I love them. It's just like eating the sea.
Apparently, I'm reading a book at the moment called The Ethical Carnivore. It's good to eat oysters for the planet.
Oh, there you go.
Where their habitats are, that it makes it much, much better for all the fish around. You get much better fish life around them. So where they use a thing to sweep up more, greedily sweep up, and they dig up all the seabed, they're trawling, but not like in little pots where they're special, horrible, evil ships that like scrape up all the bottom of the seabed. It's just destroyed the habitats of where mussels would be growing. So there's lots of places, including lots of places in Essex, where they're homing and starting to let's go and eat some oysters in Essex.
Excellent, I will.
But yeah, what was a cricket like to eat?
Just tasted like crisps. It was just crunchy. It was just crunchy.
Did it not taste like an animal at all?
No.
Just crisps.
Well, it had like a just dust on it, and I discovered I loved it.
Light to life.
It was like had like barbecue dust on it, so it just tasted like barbecue.
It tasted like whatever it had been spiced with, basically.
Yeah, I've eaten horse, I've eaten
Was horse nice? I think I probably had it as a kid in France, but I don't remember.
Yeah, it was fine. I've eaten frog's legs, I've eaten snails.
I like frog's legs.
Yeah, I like frog's legs. I like snails, they just taste like garlic butter. Because that's what
they taste like mussels. Yeah, it tastes what it's been stuffed in. To be honest, it does taste a bit like bogies.
Yeah, I don't mind that because I like mussels. So, yeah, I eat pretty much anything. The only thing I don't eat, sweet corn. Unless it's in a samosa, because then it just tastes like spice.
Yeah.
I mean, at a push, if it's in a spring roll, I might tolerate it, but I'm not happy.
Well, no, I do remember this, actually, because when I was checking if there's anything that you hated, so I didn't bring you that to eat. And I remember the sweet corn from that.
Sweet corn.
It's a very distinctive flavour, isn't it?
I just really hate it. And what I really hate is that whenever you say, I don't eat sweet corn, people automatically assume that you mean you don't eat sweet corn from a can. And then they're like, except corn on the cob. I'm like, that is literally unadulterated sweet corn. Of course I don't eat corn on the cob. I hate it. And my family love it so much. And because my husband loves to cook outdoors and barbecue, we eat sweet corn every single day.
So my children constantly love it.
Yes, they absolutely love it. I feel like I've been the torturer
because my kid does not like tomatoes. And I grew some tomatoes and was like, these are the best tomatoes I've ever tasted. Please try one. And he was like, I don't like tomatoes. And I was like, but this is the best. And he ate it and was like, and I got it down and went, that's the most tomatoey tasting tomato I've ever grown. And it's like, why would you think that someone wants the essence, the pure essence source of the thing they've already told you they
don't like? Because I don't have a corn on the cob.
I'm sorry.
I hate it. That is the only thing. I also used to say that I didn't like peas because I don't like the way, like, you know, when I was a kid, my mom just put peas on the side of the plate. Like, every single day. And I just don't like peas on the side of my plate. Again, I'll take them in a samosa. And so my
husband made me
a four-course meal with literally exclusively of peas to prove that I did really like peas. It was like pea velouté. And then like a goat's cheese and pea omelette. And then pea fritters and something. And even the pudding had peas in it. And it was all totally delicious. So now I'm not allowed to say that I don't like peas because apparently I really like peas.
Oh, he made his point there, didn't he? Perfect. I think if he's going to go to that effort, I'm really glad he succeeded.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you into cooking? It must be hard to be into cooking when you live with someone who's exquisite at cooking and you're as busy as you are.
Yeah, it is quite hard, but I really love it. I love to cook.
Okay.
I really love it. I find it really relaxing to cook because I like a job with an end.
Yeah.
But I'm not good at it, I wouldn't have said. I'm really good at making the things that... I'm really good at making a roast dinner.
Great.
Because my mum only ever used to cook. My dad did all the cooking when I was a kid.
Me too.
And so my mum only ever cooked on a Sunday.
Right.
And so I used to sit and do all the cooking with my mum as something nice to do so I can cook a roast dinner. I'm really good at making potato dauphinoise.
Nice.
Yeah, so that is one of my specialties.
Potato dauphinoise is like thinly sliced potatoes in a cream. In a bake.
Well, you've got to... you can put cheese on, but I don't. I put butter on the top so it goes all crunchy. But you've got to put loads of salt and pepper on every layer, otherwise it's bland. So I make a lot of that, and I'm really good at making that, this one particular beef noodle. So that is it, really. I eat a lot of stuff out of packets if I have to cook. So they just open a Marks and Spencer's near our house, so I'll just go and buy some ridiculously expensive ready-made food from Marks and Spencer's.
That their £10 deal is thing of joy.
Indeed.
Thing of
so that joy. Is what we eat if I'm cooking. But yeah, it is actually really, really hard to be good at cooking.
Yeah.
Or to do any cooking when you know he would just totally shit all over you.
It's competitive. It's human nature to be competitive.
And also, why do it when somebody else is going to do it for you and he does it so well?
Do you know what? I didn't even mean the M&S £10 meal deal. I meant the Tesco's one. Are you aware of that?
Oh, do I have a Tesco near me?
You get two massive main courses, two sides, two puddings, and a bottle of wine for a tenner.
That is good. That is a good deal.
It's really good
deal. We don't have a Tesco. But
it's worth travelling, Jess. I live in Lewisham and we've just got an Asda and it's awesome. It's like, I feel like I've got all the benefits of an Aldi or a Lidl because it's like 50p for a bag of Rocket. It's really cheap.
True.
But also, it's got everything. You're following a recipe. Yes.
And our Asda in my constituency, I'm not joking, it looks like the Louvre. You could mistake yourself for being at the Louvre in Paris when you're at the Astra on the Small Heath Highway. I mean, the surroundings are nothing like Paris, I'm going to be honest. But it's basically a pyramid of glass. It's amazing.
Wow!
Look it up, Small Heath Astra. Look it up. You'll be like, my God, that looks like the Louvre.
I'm going to look it up. I'm going to put a picture of Small Heath Astra on this podcast instead of a picture of food.
Small Heath Astra. It's a thing of beauty.
It's like, you mate, you've described it like Gattaca.
Yeah,
all that glass. Yes, yeah,
that is what the Small Heath Astra is like until you get inside and it's less like the Louvre then.
My house is just, it's where I live, is so gloriously diverse. It's literally, it's got everything. We've got two full international
lives. Well, they have done a really good thing about marking the area where it is.
Yeah.
And selling, so the Small Heath Asda is in an area that is 90% Pakistani and Bangladeshi. Right. So, I mean, here in London, maybe I'll have to go to your Lewisham Asda.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I can't get coriander at the corner shop for love nor money, whereas where I live,
yeah.
I mean, I've got coriander coming out of my ears.
Yeah, you can even find like stuff which I just assume is quite obscure. I've got amphor, this like ground mango dust.
Yeah, I mean, hello. The international aisles in Asda, I like the American section where you buy like Lucky Charms.
Yeah, just some butterfinger. Yeah. Just some butterfinger. Oh, it's just a crappy bit, isn't it? It's just like the big weak link in an otherwise amazing couple of aisles. It's just crap.
It's like amazing Polish sausages and cheese and amazing cabanas, and then you get to like pretzels covered in chocolate.
Yeah.
It's so
shitty. Some like dusty American Hershey's. Bit. Yeah, well, apart from Reese's Pieces, I think that's the finest piece of confectionery so far.
I like the Reese's, the cup ones.
Yeah, with peanut butter.
Yeah, with the peanut butter. But me and my kids did a thing that we saw on YouTube where we like got scalpels and like we cut them open and then we stuffed them with other things so that when people bit into them, they were different. And when they did it on the internet, like Oreos and the cream from Oreo and all this other things, it was very American. When they did it on the internet, it looked really neat. Nobody would have been fooled by ours. They would have been like, who's taken a rusty scalpel?
To my delicious, to my already really nice and now less nice treat.
Yeah, I really like those Reese's though.
I'm going to ask you a very strange question from one of my listeners.
Okay.
He's called Dowie Reese. I've said it in a Welsh accent. So
you're assuming
I'm just
Welsh.
Assuming he's Welsh. What's the sexiest looking food you've ever eaten?
Oh, I think food is quite sexy.
Yeah.
I like anything that you sort of have to use your hands. Anything with a ritual. So I really like drinking tequila, not because I like the taste of tequila, it's because I like the ritual of drinking tequila.
It's also, you wouldn't be doing that on your own. Which is, you know what I mean? Exactly. It's part of a fun time. Exactly. If you're doing something, you're squeezing limes and lemons and salt
around. So I like food that is... I like food that is like lots of plates that you share and things. Yeah. I'm quite a big fan of like any sort of charcuterie and sharing that sort of thing. So I think that is sort of like meat. My husband is obsessed with meat as well. But my husband is really terrible at sharing food. So like tapas, he's like Jerry in Friends. There was an episode where he dumps a really beautiful woman because she eats some of his chips. Like he cannot abide a tapas restaurant. Like an original tapas one where you sit on the bar and you have bits, that is fine. But where you order things and you like, oh, let's all just have a little bit of everyone else's, he's like, no. I ordered this. If I'd wanted what you ordered, I would have ordered that. But I didn't order that, so I'm going to eat these chicken livers and sherry.
Or to myself.
So we don't have very many sexy evenings. No. I've been married for 14 years, so I didn't remember anything before him.
I think that's such a good answer because I'm so immature. When I read the question, like, what's the sexiest looking food you've ever seen? You just think, a banana with two kiwis? Like, what else are you meant to say?
Cock and balls.
It looks like a cock and ball.
Yeah, like a flake. Like a woman in the advert.
Oh, God.
Cadbury's Caramel Bunny was quite sexy.
Yeah.
As well.
That was, that was a sexy looking food. Have you ever given food as a present?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like all the
some
time.
Some sweets or some chocolates or...
Yeah, no, but also, like, we'll make food. Whenever any one of my friends has a baby,
yes,
we have a tradition where we all, where I will always make, like, a Malaysian curry for them.
That's
another thing that I can make. And then we leave it around the house. And when my mum died, my friends all left me a Lebanese takeaway on the doorstep. It was like the best thing that ever happened. And every day there would be like a new casserole on the door. So I think that actually giving food, especially when actually live events happen, is the greatest thing you can do. So all, me and all my friends and family, that is the
I love cooking for people who've just had a baby.
Oh, it's the best.
But, you know, I've never even thought about helping out someone who's grieving. Yeah. Like, of course.
Yeah, so, yeah. Lebanese, I mean, also, like, if you can't be asked to eat, because what I say to my husband when I'm feeling, like, either sad or sick, so you have to get me something that I cannot refuse, like, something that's so delicious. And nobody, no matter how sad, and, you know, I really love my mum, but a shawarma, I'm not going to turn a shawarma down. It's absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
A shawarma with some pickled turnip.
Even in the
Oh my God. Oh, I'm right there.
Just 5 minutes where I'm distracted from my terrifying grief.
I could be dying and I would still eat that. I could be in a car crash and they could hand that to me and I'd be like, I'm definitely going to eat
it. I'll manage this before I go.
Exactly. So that... I think giving food as a gift is one of the best things you can do.
It so is. I really like making lasagnas in, like, takeaway, like this, for people that have just had babies. And what else does that make me think of? Oh, when I just had my son, lots of people brought us around cakes. And it was really lovely and baked stuff. But it was really interesting what the friends that also had kids already brought us, because it was just that little extra thing. Like, one friend bought chocolates, but they're all full of real booze. And she bought me loads of, like five little one-person Prosecco bottles. Yeah. And she was like, because when I had my daughter, everyone brought around whole bottles, and I didn't even get to have half of them. The boyfriend had, like, she was like, so these are just for you, okay? Like, and another one bought me around, like, an M&S crispy duck pancakes.
Mm.
Man, that was good.
Exactly. So
the things you remember.
Sort of, also, when you grow up in a community like the one I live in, the idea of takeaway boxes, like, turn up at your house every single night.
Yeah.
So it is, I mean, there is always some pakora in the corner of my kitchen that has been brought round to my house. Yeah, because that idea of sharing food is really, I mean, where I live as well, there's like eight houses that are all the same family, so they're running up and down the road giving food to each other at dinner time, so that only one person has to cook, and they're passing, so they drop in, like, pakora and samosa, and during Ramadan we have, like, dinner and Ramadan dinner, and so I just put on, like, a three-stone during Ramadan. I don't do any of the fasting, I just do all of the second
dinner.
And one year I'm actually going to fast, so that I can feel justified in eating a quality street tin worth of biryani at 9:20.
I love it. I'm going to ask you one last question very quickly. So it's a ridiculous question. It's like sort of desert island dinners. Okay. Everyone gets their own ridiculous scenario. Okay. But ultimately it's like, what would your dream meal be? But here is your specific scenario. It's election day. And it turns out you can win it Labour's way. But the only way it can happen, don't ask, democracy is in a constant state of modernisation.
It's
by going to a hellish adult nursery rhyme rave, Jess, where you have to do all the actions to wind the bobbin up and head, shoulders, knees and toes. She's doing it now. But to a massive techno torture music. And it goes on in a karaoke booth, which is also a time capsule. So actually you're there for a solid day and night, even though to the outside it seems like you've only been in there for an hour. You do it! You're a hero! Labour win! And all because of you. Humankind is saved. You're knackered, though, obviously. Mm-hmm. Very sweaty. You've done the works. You're whacked. But you're allowed to, like, have a shower and get changed or whatever, but then the hunger of the after exercise kicks in. You're allowed whatever you want. I want to know. It doesn't even have to be... You can make it up. It doesn't have to be sensible or go together. It can be... This is the thing of dreams. I just want to know what you're eating, what you're drinking, who with... And where?
Okay, I would be with my six girlfriends and their partners, lovely, including my husband. They're all friends, and we're all friends in a sort of 1950s
I love it.
Manner. And I would probably, my absolute comfort food is my husband's fish curry that he makes.
Luckily he hasn't perfected it yet, so he's
he has absolutely, we got it wrong a couple of times and I was relieved.
You should sabotage.
Yeah, that's such a shovel
over again at the wrong one.
I would eat that and my dad's lemon dal my dad makes, which just reminds me of being a kid, because it was cheap food that wasn't minced with BSE in, which was the other thing that we exclusively ate when I was a child. So I would have those two things, and they would go quite nicely together.
Yeah, lovely, actually.
And I would drink gin.
Just gin.
You've
got a favourite gin.
I mean, there's just too many these days.
So many. There's one called Ophir. If you
tried, I've tried that. It's really lovely, like an elephant type.
Yeah, and it's got like got spices in it, basically, a lot of pink pepper. Mm.
So I would drink gin with my girlfriends and their partners, and sit around in my garden.
Your garden.
In my garden. Brilliant. Yeah, that is what I'd do.
Heaven.
That is my happiness.
What a magic woman. Thank you so much to Jess Phillips for sharing some seriously crispy charred cookies with me. But on the upside, at least they weren't perfect, so I probably will actually make them again. I've read her book, Every Woman, and it's funny and moving in equal measure. You should get it. Also, I know Jess has got a proper, very serious job, but incidentally, politics aside, she is funny AF on Twitter. She's on all the socials as @JessPhillips. Also follow this podcast. It's on Twitter and Insta @TheHooveringPod. And it's not all just begging and gloating. There's funny stuff on there too. Please rate, review and subscribe and follow me as well. I'm @JessicaFosterQue. I love hearing from you, please. Tweet or email through my website, jessicafosterQue.com. That always makes my day a bit, you know. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.